Welcome to the Norris Group's Real Estate Radio Show. Hosted by author, investor, hard money lender, and real estate educator, Bruce Norris. Equipping California real estate professionals for tomorrow's challenges.
Hi, thank you for joining us. My name is Bruce Norris. Today we're joined by Mark Fleming. Mark is the chief economist for First American CoreLogic, America's largest provider of advanced property and ownership information, analytics, and services. Mark, welcome to our show.
Thank you for having me.
Could you basically describe what the Core Risk Monitor is and what it does?
Sure. The premise behind the Core Risk Monitor is to evaluate or project about 6 months to a year forward where we believe mortgage delinquency risk is most likely at the CBSA level. We do that by building a model that evaluates trends in house price dynamics, economic risk, usually driven by factors like labor market trends, unemployment rates, wage growth.
Okay.
Foreclosure and delinquency trends in the marketplace, and collateral risk trends.
Of all those topics that you just mentioned, which do you feel is the first domino that falls that makes those other categories follow? Or is that predictable?
We have firsthand experience over the last 18 months with the two most important ones, and that's the economic risk and the house price trends. Clearly, what we see going on today is with declining house prices in many markets, more and more individuals are at risk of being underwater on their mortgages. We view that as a necessary but not necessarily sufficient condition for late delinquency and foreclosure. The other one is economic risk, or more specifically, one's ability to pay their mortgage. If you lose your job, in all likelihood, you're going to have a hard time making those mortgage payments. That's the other necessary but not sufficient condition. It's when those two conditions conspire together that foreclosure risk occurs. Foreclosures then lead to more downward pressure on prices and the economic risk. So in many markets, what we're tracking most importantly now is labor market conditions in combination with house price trends.
The downturn of 91 to 97 in California, would it have had the same model as far as price declines causing damage, or was it a different dynamic?
It was a slightly different dynamic. I mean, you had both issues in play in California at the time with changes in the employment base and the unemployment rates being slightly higher than average, and obviously house prices declining as a function of that. Really, in that situation, I think house prices really responded to the economic condition risk.
Okay.
This time around, we're seeing that really in Southern California in particular, obviously, it's more a function of the house price downward trends. It's really a correction due to restabilizing affordability levels in the marketplace for house prices. The economic risk is either following on from that due to construction jobs and things like that being laid off, or more fundamentally, independently, economic risk increasing in many marketplaces due to sort of the general economic malaise right now.
Would the core items be different for different states?
Yes, I mean, depending on where you are in the country, the magnitude of and what's important may differ. Or actually, I should say at this point, it's less so about what the trends are. I mean, basically, it's still those are the two primary conditions. The magnitudes cause different things. For example, in the upper Midwest, you've had a somewhat lengthy period of rising unemployment and the sort of economic distress in the auto industry and ancillary services industries to the auto industry there, causing very little lack of home price appreciation, while the rest of the country, Southern California, where I'm located in Washington, D.C., in the Northeast, experiencing high house price growth, that didn't really happen in the upper Midwest. And now, not only are they experiencing moderate house price declines, but also economic risk. It's that's driven more from the economic risk driving house prices, sort of the mid-90s California scenario is sort of what's happening in the upper Midwest, with economy leading house prices as opposed to house prices leading economy.
You mentioned affordability is one of the factors. As an area gets more affordable, is there then less risk in that area? The more affordable it gets, is there less risk, or does it play out that way?
I think yes, indirectly. Increasing affordability. Well, what does that mean? It means that more individuals will be able to enter the market for housing on the demand side and buy homes. And the ability for more people to afford and be able to buy homes means that one might be able to begin to reduce the inventories and begin to stop the downward slide in home prices, potentially even begin to reverse it moderately. And those, once that occurs, risk begins to reduce. But there's a couple of steps along the way before it really causes risk reduction.
Your company's called CoreLogic. Does core emotion play a role in somebody's willingness to enter a market, even if they're capable? Are they sometimes likely not to want to?
I'm an economist by trade, and most economic notions rely on the idea of rational behavior.
That's why the logic, right?
Right. I think it's safe to say that humans often act irrationally. There's clearly, what's in one's best interest and what one actually does don't always coincide. The pricing behavior of the seller, it's very difficult to keep cutting your price to be on spot with market. There's emotional attachment to your home. There's a sort of emotional financial attachment to the price you paid and not wanting to sell it for less than you paid for it. We never like to lose.
Correct.
Right?
Also fear.
From the buyer's perspective, they're trying to drive hard bargains and get a good deal. We never like to lose.
That right now there's a fear in the market about I might be making a mistake if I buy right now. And that's kind of why, even though it's more affordable, I think you have a lot of people perhaps hesitant to take the step.
Yes, one way of saying it is I don't want to be the one catching the falling knife.
Correct.
I'll pick it up off the floor when it's at bottom. So I think that might be a cause. Then I think people start to get so it becomes such a good deal that maybe you'll do it anyway. Somewhere along the line, that obviously gives and people come back into the marketplace.
I think that's true. In the third quarter 2007, Ohio and Michigan topped the highest risk markets. What made them the highest risk? And then a year later, none of them were on the top 10 list. So what did they do to improve?
It wasn't necessarily that they improved. It's that other markets got worse.
Okay.
Right.
So you had bad markets, and now you have terrible markets.
Right. And that the single most important cause of that has been the house price declines. We were ranking the upper Midwestern markets as risky at that time, mostly due to the economic risk, low wage growth and high unemployment rates in combination with relatively flat house prices. And then over the past 18 months, what's happened is the strength of the house price declines in many of our top markets, a lot of California and Florida markets primarily, have surpassed the riskiness of the upper Midwestern markets because of the magnitudes of the house price depreciation.
In the latest report that I saw, third quarter of 2007, California now has 8 of the 10 riskiest areas in the country.
Yeah.
And yet a year before that, they had none. So that was that complete turnaround really was just strictly due to price declines.
Right. I mean, you can, house price growth cures all ills when it comes to mortgage delinquency. Because as long as the value of the homes are appreciating, there's always the option for refinance and or sale.
Correct.
Right?
Yep.
And so it's very rare that you would have someone might go delinquent on their mortgage, but ultimately it would get worked out. The solution would be a refinance or a sale in a rising housing market. That turns around and goes the other way. When house prices are falling, more and more people are losing that option by falling underwater, as they say, in the outstanding mortgage balance relative to the home value. And that removes that option for sale and refinance. So a lot more individuals, when they can't pay their mortgage, run into that problem. And that's really what the model that is behind the Core Mortgage Risk Monitor is identifying in these marketplaces right now.
California's had price explosions before and had some price declines before. I don't think I've ever seen anything with this kind of velocity on the downside. Is that accurate?
Yes, in terms of magnitude, it's probably one of the strongest cycles we've seen historically tracking house prices. I mean, even when we look at it nationally, the national trend is rivaling some of our worst regional trends historically.
Is that because the dominant states are doing so bad that this time they're actually dragging down the national numbers?
Oh yeah, it's in part that, as well as the strong amount of geographic diversification of the downward trend. It's many, many markets experiencing the downward pressure, not just localized areas. Well, California and Florida, the two strongest markets for house price declines, are also two of the largest markets. California is actually the largest mortgage market in the country, so that's certainly there. But I think one of the other big differences is that it's such a well-diversified downward trend among many, many markets, whereas historically these housing recessions, if you will, have been much more localized.
What percentage of houses in California are underwater at this point?
It's 27 or 28%, I believe.
Have we had anything close to that before, where we had that many negative equity-positioned owners?
That we don't know, because this was the first time we tracked the numbers in this fashion.
Okay.
But what we can say is I would suspect that it's probably got to be up there at the, well, it's its highest level ever since we just started tracking it. But relative to if we had been tracking, I expect it should be in the top echelon of numbers because of the size of the magnitude in house price decline, which is obviously the strongest driver of being in a negative equity position or not. And we know that that's one of the strongest declines we've seen historically.
Whose opinion of value are we using when you determine that we're in a negative position?
Oh, so what we do is use automated valuation models.
Okay.
Basically, statistical models that predict house prices as a function of information on the properties themselves, as well as the market trends in that in the local area. And so we estimated that number by running an AVM or automated valuation model on all homes with mortgages in California.
Okay. And what date did you do that? I'm just curious.
That's as of the end of September.
September. Okay.
We compared that number to the first and sort of outstanding mortgages on the property, including first and junior liens, and sort of come up with a loan-to-value ratio. And if you're above 100%, then you're considered to be underwater or in a negative equity position.
Are there other states that are even worse off than California?
Yes. The worst state is Nevada.
Nevada, okay.
At 48%.
Now, does that 48% include the California investors that probably snuck over the border and bought something?
Yep.
Okay.
Any property with a mortgage would be the classifying term. And so what's going on in Nevada, similar to many of the Southern California markets, a strong downward trend in house prices, right?
Mm-hmm.
But in combination with the housing stock, and if you will, the mortgage stock in Nevada is much younger than that of California. I mean, there was building in California. There was a significant share of people getting mortgages in California over the last couple of years, and those are the individuals most at risk of being in a negative equity position because they haven't had the time to pay down their mortgages and build up equity, right?
Correct.
And they bought at a high price point in the marketplace. That's what's going on in Nevada. But the difference is that in California, there is a lot larger share of homeowners with mortgages who maybe bought their homes in the 70s or the 80s or the early 90s, you know, along the way. Whereas the Nevada markets are much sort of younger and don't have as big a share of those kinds of mortgage holders. So it's basically a more exposed or more at risk to downturns in house prices than California, hence the higher number.
It seems that we're now going to enter the next phase where unemployment becomes a pretty major factor. Do you see that exacerbating the problem to where we even have further declines?
So decline in house prices?
Yes. In other words,
Okay. Yes,
unemployment may be forcing people to sell, and they're in that negative equity position, but they have no choice because they have to move to find a job.
Right. So a couple of things happen. So first of all, to be in a negative equity position in and of itself is not a risky situation, right? It's the, as I was saying earlier, the combination of the two necessary but not sufficient conditions. The other one being the economic condition or inability to pay, loss of job, that kind of situation. So the rise in the risk of being unemployed or having a hard time making one's payment in combination with more individuals being in a negative equity position clearly is the recipe for more foreclosures. And so, yeah, the rising tide in unemployment is going to have a negative impact on mortgage delinquency risk for whatever negative equity position we're in or as that rises. But I think it's important to distinguish that realistically, when you're in a negative equity position, in many cases, that decision to move for a job, you would be more likely to look locally than afar because of the fact that you're in a negative equity position. There are studies that have shown basically that mobility of the workforce reduces as house price declines occur because obviously you stay put. And so you might choose to find a new job or take a job with a lower pay in your local marketplace and not have to move relative to casting a wider net and possibly contemplating moving because you can't move because you'd have to go to the closing table with tens of thousands of dollars that you don't have.
Well, you bring up an interesting point. In California, there's no recourse for just having the lender take it back. So there's very few people that bring tens of thousands of dollars to a closing table. They simply hand the house back. And there's no lender, you have a foreclosure on your record, but very rarely do you see people willing to write checks to make up their negative equity position.
So right, they would rather have the impact on their credit report of having gone through foreclosure, for example.
Well, see, the negative equity position in California many times is not $10,000. We're in the property buying business. That's what we do. We're buying properties right now for $90,000 that the lenders were owed $350,000 on, very often. Now those are deals, but that means they're probably only worth $160,000 or $170,000. So you have neighborhoods all over the place now where a lot of the neighbors owe $350,000. Their neighbor just bought a very nice house for $170,000, and some investor stole one for $90,000, and the capability of paying on that $350,000 loan might be hard to do and change into unwillingness to pay. And I think that's one of those things that we haven't really been up against before to this extent. So it'll be interesting to see how that plays out.
Right. I agree. I think that gets more into the, what are the behaviors of individuals going to be under these kinds of circumstances that maybe we haven't seen before. Causing a behavior that we haven't seen before.
We have,
and I agree with you. I mean, if you're having a hard time making your mortgage payment, how on earth are you going to have the money to make the loan whole if you're underwater? I mean, it would be a relatively unlikely event. So, yeah, all those really difficult decisions begin to come into play for those individuals.
Do you see any version of the bailout or foreclosure assistance program helping stem the foreclosure situation?
Yeah, I mean, clearly the more loans that are modified and put people who otherwise had untenable or unsustainable payments into a payment that they can afford, who can argue against that? Obviously, having a good benefit in reducing the risk of foreclosure.
I wonder if there's an unintentional consequence to that. let's say that I'm not eligible for any of those programs because I got a fixed rate loan, and I live next door to someone I know who exaggerated their income to get into that house. They're eligible for those programs, and I am not. So when I
you raise the specter of moral hazard.
Yes, and that's a very big one in this instance.
Yeah, I think that's the challenge of those who are designing the loan modification programs, to come up with programs that are effective at modifying individuals and modifying enough individuals to have an overall beneficial impact, as well as avoiding significant moral hazard risk.
The actual foreclosure numbers in California for the last quarter are down something around 80% from the year before, or the quarter before, rather. And that has to do with new legislation that was passed, SB 1137, which makes it harder for the lender to foreclose. They have to go through some other steps.
Right.
So when you see those numbers, it's going to be very misleading as to saying, oh, things have improved, when in fact they really have not.
Right. We're actually not... We're basically ignoring that seeming improvement because of that legislation.
Okay.
At this point, one possibility is that it's basically just bottlenecking it, and once they sort out how to conform to the legislation, then it'll just all come rushing back through again, right?
That's
so there's operational challenges to being able to conform to the law, right? In terms of the filing of the affidavit.
Absolutely. There's a lot of phone calling that has to be done, potential meetings. So to staff up for that is pretty onerous.
So the decline in those numbers right now, it's unclear. There's no way to tell at this point from a data perspective whether it's indicative of a true market trend or just a temporary response to the change in the process.
Is fraud generally a bigger problem in states that are having the larger price declines?
It depends. It comes and goes. Fraud obviously is a problem in these environments with house price declines. That's not to say it's not a problem in other places, but when house prices are declining and there's large amounts of foreclosure activity in homes for sale under REO, that it provides a good source of cheap properties upon which to perpetrate fraud. So the scams that take homes from people who are in distress, the process of buying cheap properties at discounted prices and flipping them, all of those things are facilitated in these distressed environments.
We're down to our last minute. If you were in charge of solving this mess, what would you do differently?
No comment.
No comment.
There's too many things to talk about. We can't cover that in a minute.
Are you pleased with the direction of the solutions?
Well, I think I'd say that obviously it's a very important situation that we're in that warrants a lot of discussion and careful forethought of what the right things to do are, because we're talking about people and homes. Not what flat-screen TV did we buy yesterday. So these are significant components of individual homeowner wealth and obviously the utility of shelter over your head. So I guess I would say that, I'm glad that we're having the discussions and that these things are being talked about. What the outcomes will be, I think, remains well to be seen.
One last question. In the model that you're looking at and a percentage of over-encumbered people, does that include the people who refied their way to being over-encumbered?
Yes, it's basically though it's your whatever mortgages you have outstanding today. So if you refied last year, it's your refi loan, not your purchase loan.
Okay. I would think those people would probably deserve maybe a little less sympathy than the other people. All right, Mark.
That's the moral hazard question again, right?
It is. Mark Fleming, thank you so much for joining us. I enjoyed the discussion.
Thank you very much. You're welcome.
You've been listening to the Norris Group Real Estate Radio Show. For more information on the Norris Group, please visit www.thenorrisgroup.com.